You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show.
For today's episode, we bring you our recording from the legendary Sun Studio in Memphis, Tennessee.
We got to travel together. We went to Nashville. We went to Memphis. But something really, really special happened when we were in Memphis.
Yeah, I'd say it was pretty divine. Like it Elvis was. Himself was looking
Elvis
down
was
on
guiding
us and
us.
Guiding us.
He definitely had a hand in this. We went to Sun Studio for a tour. They do tours there. It was an amazing tour. We thought, you know, that was going to be the highlight itself, but it turned into this late night after hours session with Daniel Crockett Hall and
Plez Hampton.
Yeah.
So big thank you to Daniel and Plez for inviting us there. We couldn't believe it, and we didn't know if it was really going to happen or not afterwards. We were just happy to have been invited in the first place, and people might be wondering, well, how the hell did you get invited? How did it happen?
Yeah. Well, on the tour, we got to talking with Daniel, and he was such...
Afterwards, he said, y'all want to talk to me?
Yeah. He's a feminist and he's such an awesome guy, and he really champions women in music. And he told us a story of Marion and told us a story of Barbara Pittman and Marion Kiesker. So,
yeah, and it was just evident during the tour how passionate he was
about
the women who had worked at Sun Studio and the contribution that they had made. And so afterwards when he said if anybody wanted to go speak with him after, we jumped right on him. And when he asked us what we were doing in town, and we said we had been at a podcast festival, and he said, well, why don't y'all come back later and record an episode? And we said, holy shit, okay, we will.
Yeah. And Daniel and Plez were the perfect people to talk to. They know their history. They are so passionate about what they do. And like we said, like passionate about championing women in this industry.
In my whole life, I can't really think of a time where I was treated with so much kindness and hospitality. These guys were the real deal. Listening back on it, my heart kind of hurt because wanted to be back there.
This was such a fun one to revisit.
24 hours wasn't long enough.
No.
And the experience itself at that studio, but it was really those guys who made it what it was. Yeah. Like just, yeah. I will hold that feeling in my bones for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And they feel like, you know, they're friends for life now. We had this amazing night together, and we learned so much from them. And you are all going to learn so much. We talk about, you know, Sun Records history and the magic of recording there. And of course, Daniel and Plez talk about what it's like to work there. And
it's, I mean, the fun even started before our tour started, right? Yeah. We were joking around with all of the staff there before the tour even started.
Yeah, all the staff that worked there.
They genuinely love being there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a magical place.
Yeah, like you said, we talk about, or they explain to us, the amazing women like Marion Keisker and Barbara Pittman, and the all-female radio station that Sam Phillips created in the 50s.
Yeah, he was so ahead of his time, and he was an amazing guy. And we also kind of give the story of our podcast, and so people who don't maybe know how Muses and Stuff was born,
you're listening to us on Rock and Roll Archaeology and not so much on our network, then you'll find out.
Yeah.
And so Daniel gives us some great recommendations of local and emerging artists. And then shortly after our visit, Mick Jagger and Jerry Lee Lewis stopped by Sun Studio. So obviously it's still a hub for amazing talents and legendary recordings.
Yeah, I'm excited to find out what exactly they were up to there. Hopefully we'll get a good record out of it.
Yep. And after the mics were off, the fun kept going. We had a pretty funny incident on Elvis Presley Boulevard.
Yep. It was just such a great, magical night. And it feels special that we got to, like, record this moment in time, too, you know? I definitely will treasure this memory forever.
Yeah, and once the mics were off, we caught a little bit on film as well, which we're excited to share with you all when we release a little travel.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that.
Vlog, I guess.
There's definitely a lot of dancing happening.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I see you're wearing your Sun Studio shirt.
I am.
Yeah. I wore it yesterday.
I was wondering. I thought maybe you would wear it. Yeah. All right, everybody.
Yeah.
Listen for yourselves.
Here it is.
Enjoy the show.
Hey, Shanti.
Hi, Lynx.
Where are we?
Well, I think you should tell everybody where we are. I think you should take the honor and do it.
Ah, this is incredible. It's like I'm in heaven right now. I'm in a dream. We're sitting in Sun Records, Sun Studios. I'm looking at where Elvis stood when he recorded his first song. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we have Daniel to thank. Thank you so much.
Absolutely,
this is a dream come true.
And Plez.
Plez, thank you so
back
much.
Thank you for coming.
We really appreciate it. We came on a tour earlier.
It was such a good tour.
Actually, the guys
Who's your tour guide?
The guy,
amazing guy named Daniel.
The guys that we were here earlier with, they said about you, he was exceptional.
That's good.
No, they were talking about me.
Exceptional. And I thought that the bar staff and the people selling the merch were also exceptional.
Yeah, everyone here was amazing.
It's a fun place to work. It's really hard to have a bad day here.
Yeah.
You have to actively be trying or something is just wrong outside of this place with you, because it's really easy to have fun, you know, with the space and the people that come through.
Yeah, every day it's like a new exciting adventure happens here.
As we were taking the tour, Lynx and I whispered to each other, that guy's got a really good voice for podcasting. I wonder if he has his own.
I can ask sometimes if I have done any radio, and I always say no, I never really have. I've done a couple podcasts where I was like a guest like this. And they're always fun because I love to listen to them. But I feel like I'm a really boring and like drawn-out conversationalist.
No way.
Got
to make sure before you leave this place or before you stop doing the tours that you record yourself doing the tour, because it's really great. And
Keep
a copy of that for sure.
Have you ever recorded a podcast here?
No, this is the very first one we've ever done. Have you ever done one, Plez?
Yeah. A couple.
Okay, so Plez has done a couple, but this is Daniel's first podcast.
Yes.
This is so special. This is our first in a studio like this. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, this is a bit of a step up from our little ID Audient 14 and our two little microphones with the only two.
Usually we do this in the bedroom, in our little studio area that we've made. And
I thought this would be more fun. I always like setting up microphones, so it's not like a problem for me at all to ever like throw those down instead of using somebody else's equipment.
This is an awesome setup.
And we're also here with Lee McCormick.
Hey, yes, I'm here as well. Yeah.
Tramps Like Us. Introduce yourself, Lee.
Yeah, Lee McCormick from Tramps Like Us, Bruce Springsteen podcast.
Oh,
awesome.
Cool.
Recording live from Sun Studios, 706 Union Avenue. I'm here for probably my 17th time, I think.
18th.
18th, yeah. This is the
18th. Plus has been keeping track.
Yeah. But it, first time for him.
Yeah, first
after
time
hours.
After hours. First
yeah.
time at the PM, I think.
Oh, this is my favorite time to be in here because these walls are just, you can do anything you need or want to do musically, or you can go crazy. It's fun.
It does feel really special in here. Yeah. There's a vibe.
It's pretty crazy. The songs that have been so important in my life were recorded like right in this room.
Yeah.
It's just
I think
such
the
a vibe.
Spirits know that they have it to themselves at night.
Mm-hmm. And Lynx and I were sitting Creeping. By a pool earlier, and we decided to go to Graceland tomorrow, and we looked at each other at one point today, and we said to each other, I think Elvis would be proud. I think he knows. I think that he knows and that he would be proud.
Oh, I think, I totally believe that the stuff that comes through here, to this day, it can be somebody from, like, middle America coming through here doing Elvis karaoke. And they're still leaving a part of themselves in the room, and that, I think, just elevates so many of the people who come through and have, like, you know, just an incredible talent and songs, and it's a special place to record in, for sure.
Yeah, there's certain rooms in America that have been just legendary for recording songs, like the Motown Studio, Stax, where we
Stax,
were earlier
I love
today.
Stax, yeah.
Sun Studios.
And High, Royal Recording.
Yeah,
Royal
Muscle
Studios.
Shoals, all these, like, just legendary rooms across America where all this, like, you know, the music in the 50s and 60s, that renaissance in music, all that stuff was recorded in, like, you know, 10 rooms, you know, across America pretty much, you know.
It's wild to me to think about how, like, this was basically a garage before Sam bought it. And this, you know, room, which was a garage, must have launched thousands of, you know, similar things in other garages where bands are, you know, coming in and they're playing and they're working on the opportunity to hopefully go record somewhere, and it all literally started in what was a garage. That's wild to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable. How long have you guys been working here?
Plez, how long have you been here? Like,
5 years?
I think 5 years, about. It was called Magic Throttle Body Company.
What? That was the garage?
Yeah.
Oh, I love to see. I'm so glad.
I don't Amazing think he
has Magic
a
Throttle Body Co.
But we should explain, because there's four of us sitting around the microphones here, and then Plez is behind us.
And
this
killing
amazing
it. That's me.
He's in the Sam Phillips.
With Sam Phillips tonight. Watching over him.
Yes.
He doesn't mind. You know, it was all cars. The area was used cars next door, both sides, across the street, a garage. This was the, you get off a boat on the river and you come into town and you get your car and you go east, right? And that's the point of coming to this part of the area. So it's called the Edge. It's still called the Edge. The Edge District.
I'm learning so much. And speaking of which, I learned so much today. I learned so much at Stax, and then I came here. Oh, yeah. And one of the things that we were really happy about and really piqued our interest with you, Daniel, was the way that you talked about the women when you walked around the exhibit. And because we don't get that a lot, which is why we kind of felt like our podcast needed to fill that niche. There's a billion podcasts about true crime, and there's a billion podcasts about this musician, and there's the first ever, I just heard, not first ever, but maybe, but someone just told me about two women who started a podcast on the Beatles, and that's like almost unheard of, because there are so many podcasts about the Beatles, but it's two women that are doing the Beatles, so it's
really
like, okay, so what's their perspective going to be on the Beatles? What are they talking about the Beatles? But the way that you walked around and you talked about them, and there was one point where you said girl power, and I let out a woo! Yeah, I was so excited, and then, so we got to learn about Estelle Axton, and I didn't even know that was the Axe and Stax, and then I didn't even know about Marion, but I'm not surprised.
Oh, of course. Like, it's so unfortunate that those stories so often go overlooked.
Can you talk a little bit about Marion?
Yes. Plez, do you want to give us Marion's backstory? Because you'd be way better at details, and then I'll throw in my favorite little stories.
Yeah. Marion.
Throwing it to the booth.
I got you. Marion Marion Keisker McInnes. Marion Keisker was her, you know, pre-married name. She started her career in radio when Sam was 12 years old. So Marion got quite the jump start on Sam Phillips. She moved up through basically a male-dominated industry.
You said she was
radio.
17?
She was 15.
Oh, wow. I think.
But Sam was 12. I always like that. Sam Phillips was 12 years old when Marion started working radio, officially.
I think it's really – there's a great book by Peter Guralnick about Sam where he talks, of course, about Marion and goes into detail about her importance to the studio, the early day-to-day like functioning and operations. And she would even – she believed in Sam and what he was doing so much that she would sometimes take – money out of her own purse and put it in the petty cash so that they had money in the office out there to keep the place going. And he couldn't have done this without her.
Yeah.
And he was very aware of that, too. He started the first all-girl radio station, which we don't really get to talk about. We can talk about that later. But he at one point, he was doing like a commencement speech somewhere, and he took an opportunity in the midst of them having kind of a public feud about who first recorded Elvis. Mm-hmm. He takes that opportunity to validate her as a person he like was a partner to, and really stress that he knows, in spite of that they don't remember how this happened, yeah, the same, he knows how valuable her work and effort was to this place. So I think I love that we get to tell that part of the story.
Yeah.
Is that she was such a crucial aspect of it.
It's interesting, too, when the men who are working with the women appreciate them and, like, know how valuable they are, yet still somewhere in talking about music history, they got, like, overshadowed. Oh, yeah. And it's strange.
Yeah, well, the people in power write the stories, so yeah. that's gonna represent those,
I guess,
people.
Mostly
so
men
often
are writing those stories, yeah. And
yep. But we've been reading some incredible books by some incredible women, and it's super fun to be a part of sharing that story, and not necessarily that we were doing it first, because we were really inspired by this woman named Pamela DeBar. Have you ever heard of her?
I have not.
So Pamela DeBar was one of the freaks. She was sort of one of Frank Zappa's freaks. Mm-hmm. Back in the 60s
and 70s.
He started
an all-girl band with Miss P, was one of them. It's called the GTOs.
The Girls Together Outrageously, or the Girls Together Only, or the Girls Together, and then they would sort of film.
Yeah.
And they were like a singing, dancing, visual troupe.
They were beautiful, and some of them were like not as like you're traditionally beautiful. Yeah. But one of the women, Miss Mercy, actually Tiny Tim gave them all their names, Miss Lucy and Miss Bella and Miss Mercy.
Oh, that's
and
so cool.
Oh yeah, she has like amazing stories about she'd go over to Tiny Tim's house and he would take a hockey puck wrapped in it wasn't tinfoil, it was like not saran, but it was like the baking sheet.
Oh yeah, a cookie sheet,
the
whatever
wax.
It was. Wax.
Yeah.
He would take out a hockey puck out of the freezer and then they would play mini sticks. And Miss Mercy actually was the one that inspired Alice Cooper's eye
Yeah,
makeup.
They used to do their makeup for them before they met the GTOs. They were pretty straight-laced. Like, they looked kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's
Lynx and I met through Pamela DeBar's writing workshops, because she teaches writing workshops all across Canada and the U.S. and the U.K. And so Lynx,
she has 5 books. The first one is called I'm with the Band. That's like her
Confessions
most famous.
I'm with the
groupie.
Classic one.
Yeah.
Confessions
yeah.
of a Groupie.
That
that's
sounds
family.
Really
yeah.
familiar to me.
Yeah.
It's a classic book.
Yeah. You got
to
read it.
I have to read that.
You gotta
yeah,
read
I
it. Her
read
stories
that.
Are incredible. And it's been amazing knowing her. And she's like a muse to us. She's like our fairy godmother. Everything amazing that's come into my life. Like Shanti. It's like through
Lynx brought her to Toronto, and then I hosted the workshop, and then that's how we met.
Yeah.
And I had been trying to do an episode on Marianne Faithfull for so long,
yeah.
I checked the book out of the library over and over and over again, and then I couldn't check it out from the library anymore, and so I put out a message to the Dolls. They're called the Dolls, Miss Pamela's Dolls. I was like, does anybody know anything about Marianne Faithfull? And everybody was like, Lynx does. So
that's
we actually
great,
went
that's
when
a
we
great
were
first meeting
story. Yeah.
When we were in Nashville, we went to the Rolling Stones Exhibitionism.
Exhibitionism.
I wanted to see that, and I think
so
it's
good.
Almost over.
Yeah, like, I think
this was the last weekend. Yeah, today was the last day.
People kept coming through and telling me about it, and I never like got to take the opportunity. And I've been to Nashville twice, so I could have done it.
Aww.
Like that's the worst part.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool, but. You know, it wasn't big, but it was cool to see, like, some of the original instruments and stuff.
It was fun.
And the clothes.
Yeah. It was set up in, like, a tour bus?
No, they had, like, a, you know, the Musicians Hall of Fame there
yeah.
in Nashville? They had, like, a wing of that. And they had
in the Country Music Hall of Fame?
No, it's a different musicians
Hall of Fame. I didn't go to that one.
Yeah, I've never been there before.
Been to Studio B. That was a really fun tour.
The RCA Studio.
Yeah, I got totally teary-eyed on that tour, which was cool for me because I see that happen every now and then when people come through.
Well, that's probably like the second best Elvis Presley recording studio.
Oh, right. Well, that's where he did. Isn't that where he did most of the Elvis recordings?
As soon as Plez sucks the wind in through his ears, you know he wants to sing.
Also love that he's elevated there. Above us. It totally creates a.
I'm just sad that I have my back
to
him.
I know, right?
I should have thought of that. Like, I never even.
You really should have.
I just chose this seat because it's closest to the
Elvis spot.
To the Elvis spot. Yeah. But now I have my back to Plez, so it just came to bite me in the ass.
He did.
Just turn around.
He did a lot of work at RCA Studio B. It was a big studio. Lots of people. Roy Orbison ended up also on that label, recording at that studio. Chet Atkins was a big guy there. There's a Studio B back in the day. RCA was like the top of the world, you know. So they could do anything that they wanted, and I've always thought it's really. Really interesting that if Elvis hadn't gone to a place like that, I don't think that things would have happened the same way with him, with his career.
You mean like the? Are you talking about?
Yeah,
like
I mean
the trajectory
like I think if he had stayed at Sun, he wouldn't have gotten big.
I feel like the music he would have made though would have been.
Would have been incredible.
I would love to go down that alternate history road.
Yeah,
what if Elvis never left?
I like that road.
What would he?
But you know, I kind of take the position that like Elvis would have like succeeded wherever he went.
I don't know. Not here. Like,
Elvis
could have
gone to
weird.
L.A. and Elvis could have worked at Capitol.
Right. To Capitol.
Elvis
could have
gone to New York. He could have gone to Muscle Shoals.
Right.
He could have built those labels up. I think Elvis.
Yeah.
He had such a life here, and he was so here. He was such a Memphis person. Like he.
Pure.
His entire life he stayed here and he'd go on trips to other places, but like he was a Memphis guy, and it's funny it would have been completely different if he had moved away, you know, which he never did.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's get back maybe to Marion
and her
connection to Elvis.
Okay, so you have the best, like, that. You guys heard my story of how
you guys ready?
Elvis. I want you
Hold
to
on.
Hear.
Right.
I'm going to grab a drink. Does anybody need Daniel. Anything? Because you need to hear Plez's take on the story. It's, like, one of my favorites.
I'm excited for this.
So,
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow... grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
We're going to set the scene?
I'm going to switch mics so I can look at
you. Guys cool with that?
Yes.
It was Marion liked to say it was a scorcher. You know what I mean?
No, I'm good.
He was just starting it.
So I was just starting it, yeah. It's okay. Marion, she liked to say it was a scorcher. You know what I mean? One of those extremely hot summer days in Memphis, and she was sitting at her desk typing up another letter to the power company, begging him not to turn Sam's lights off, you know, because he was way too broke to pay the bill. And that's when she felt an unusually strong gust of wind blow through the room, knocked every paper off the desk. Wait, the ground beneath her feet began to rumble and quake. She said, as though the floor just might swallow her whole, moments before the front door burst open and silhouetted in sunlight.
Who was it?
Y'all, here we go. That front door. Right. Who was it? In walks Elvis, who Marion called a wiry, nervous, greasy kid with the weirdest name she'd ever heard, cradling his broken children's guitar and mumbling inquiries as to how he might be Sun's next star.
Oh, my goodness.
So Marion's, she's busy, so much right? Better. She's got a lot on her plate that day. And she always said she felt bad remembering how impatiently she looked up and asked, "Well, who do you sound like, kid?" She never forgot what he told her, though. Y'all know what he said?
I know, but I want you to say it.
She said his reply was, "Well, ma'am, I don't sound like nobody."
Yeah.
Which did turn out to be true, grammatically incorrect as it may
be. I don't sound like nobody.
I like to imagine, though, that Marion laughed out loud or maybe choked on her coffee as she scoffed under her breath. I seriously doubt she expected this 18-year-old dirt-covered pauper with his busted guitar was about to sit down and prove it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a listen to Elvis Presley's very first recording here or anywhere. It's a cover of a pop ballad called My Happiness.
Oh, how I long to be with you, my happiness. Every day I reminisce, dreaming of your tender kiss, always thinking how I miss my happiness. Years it seems have gone by since we shared our dreams, but I hold you again. There'll be no blue memories then.
There it is.
It's so good. I mean,
oh, you know how to set it up.
Make me blue.
Is that Elvis? Back was,
I love Elvis. Like, to have grown up in Memphis and never known enough about it, and I fucking worship that man. He is one of the. I mean, he's
you
the
worship
most,
at the altar of Elvis.
The most incredible recording artist of all time. I feel comfortable saying that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you ever read...
And Marion was so important this, in that.
Marion! We forgot all about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
incredible.
You know what? Now, I think if Marion... Yeah, I think Marion would be proud too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great proud story Marion. About Elvis in on his like last day in Germany. There's a press conference, which he'd not been allowed to do the length of time he was over there by the army. And at the press conference, it just so happens that Marion Kiesker had joined the... What was it? The Air Force? Was that
Army.
Right? The Army?
Officer.
So she had just joined.
Officer Kiesker.
She is at the press conference. He sees her in attendance in Germany, which is also the only like country he ever like visited outside of you know, America. And he sees her. He stops the crowd and has this a similar moment to like what Sam had had where he's like, if it wasn't for that woman right there. Or do you know exactly what he says, Plez?
The story was Marion's like... Or I guess it's Elvis says, "I don't know whether to salute you or hug you." Marion says both in that order.
Aww.
Oh.
She loved him. And her superior officers like kind of gave her a hard time because it's you're not supposed to like fraternize with the lower guys like that. And that's when Elvis came out and said, "Guys, dude, you guys must not know who this is. This lady," he said, "if it hadn't been for her, I would have never gotten my start in the music business. That was Elvis's thing.
It's
and
true.
Once they found that out, they put Marion kind of like in charge of like not USO tours, but kind of like the shows that they would do. Like Marion became a sort of wrapped up in the radio branch, which is a really big deal back then in the armed forces. Still is, I guess. But
I wonder if there's any books written about her.
Not yet.
She didn't read it.
Not yet.
Working on it.
Well, there's a podcast on her.
Well, there
now,
you go. So. But maybe looks like you two have books to write. Yeah, or a book to write.
I've got a new hobby.
And I really love the fact that Marion heard something in him when other people didn't.
Yeah.
She
specifically pushed that and told Sam to listen to this
guy.
Right?
Yeah. That's phenomenal. I'm glad he finally listened to her and gave him a shot.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's happy about that, too.
Can I do it also? Speaking of, we yes. saw that you had a photo with Roy Orbison's son.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun day.
Yeah.
Roy, so, all right. I think Elvis is great, but Roy's my guy.
Let's talk about Roy. Like, I want to talk about Roy now.
Roy Orbison is, I think, one of the most powerful voices, like, and sense of, like, he got told by Cowboy Jack Clement, who is an engineer here, when Roy came through, that he would never make it as a ballad singer. And what does everybody remember him for? But like how amazing he was at ballad.
Yeah.
So I love how this room too kind of has acted almost as a crucible for people to be like, yeah, you think that? I'm about to prove you wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He, in this room, he and Sam were very close. I think at one of Roy's sessions, his entire band quit on him, right, Plus? Like at the beginning
Kings.
Of the session,
yeah.
The Teen Kings, yeah.
They weren't getting paid, basically. Like Roy was getting royalties from Sun, and the band wasn't getting paid, so they all quit.
Well,
Roy was very upset,
and so he spent the weekend at Sam's house with Sam, basically just looking after him. And
what was that?
I don't. Is it a phone? Oh, there's a phone on the table. That's so funny.
No, that wasn't my phone.
Is it mine? Mine's in my pocket. It's not.
My phone is tucked away somewhere in my purse because, no, I just put links in charge of all that.
I know we joked about throwing them out earlier, but I think we might actually have to.
Oh, yeah. What was that? What happened? Yeah, we came in. We were just looking. We were just two humble Canadians looking for a tour, and then a cup got thrown at us.
Plus Hampton.
We were
accused. Yeah.
We were accused.
That's right.
No, yeah. Actually, you know what? It
and
was
I
me.
Said,
it's like, you know,
awesome.
Sometimes somebody, sometimes if I accidentally bump into somebody, I'll look at them and I'll go like, hey, watch it. It was kind of like the same thing.
You played into it very well. It was perfect.
Yeah.
I was so worried when I was like,
sometimes
I'm afraid we'd have to ask you to leave, that you were going to be actually worried we were serious. And you immediately played right back into it.
I didn't know exactly what was happening over there, but sometimes when I just overhear something, I like to pretend that I know what's happening, and I just got to give it a shot.
You did.
Yeah.
I'm glad you played along.
So just nobody was throwing cups at me. I didn't throw cups at anybody.
You
blamed me.
You.
I blamed Lynx, actually. I pointed at her.
That what it was.
And
I think that is exactly what happened.
I mean, technically, I think it was actually your fault.
Me?
Shanty, yes.
Oh, shit.
You threw it.
Shanty. Not
it's a,
Shanty.
It's a, no, it happens all the time. It's a soft day.
Shanty.
It's Chantel, but
oh,
Shanty. So.
Chantel.
Yes.
Okay, I like that.
It's French.
Yeah, cool.
Can we talk about Barbara Pittman at some point?
I don't know, man.
Do it
what
right
are you
now.
Say?
Wait, before we get off Roy Orbison.
Oh, shoot. I forgot. That's what we were
yes.
talking about.
Yes. Is there anything you wanted to say? I think
cross-eyed.
You got cut. In the middle, and then I
okay,
have
yeah.
something interesting I want to add in about Roy.
About his son? How was he? Was he cool?
Yeah.
No, we don't
you
care.
Met his son?
No, no, no.
Oh, okay,
it's
okay.
Different.
So Roy, his band quit on him. He spent the weekend at Sam's house with Sam just kind of like being, I don't know, nurturing is the right word, but I think that is. And
now
he was
Roy,
also, there's a great story by Barbara Barnes, who is another secretary here, where Roy... like picks her up in his Cadillac to take her somewhere that she needs to go because she took the bus to get here every day. And they get in the car. They're talking about, like, so how are you doing, Roy? And he's frustrated because his hit single on the Sun Records, or not hit maybe, but Chicken Hearted is, like, the song that he has released. And he's not into the song. He doesn't like it. And I believe it was shortly after that that he went to Monument and then cut all of the ballads that I think that's what he is known more for than some of the other guys, like Carl Perkins with Blue Suede Shoes, Elvis with, you know, That's All Right, Mystery Train, a lot of those early, you know, songs. Whereas I don't think Roy's catalog here is as well known even by extreme Roy Orbison fans. Like, I was so into him, bought every record I could find. And when I started working here, I started digging through the catalog, and it's great. It's just not. It's more rockabilly than it is.
Well,
like
Oobie Doobie.
Oh man,
Oobie Doobie is one of the greatest rockabilly songs of all
that
time.
That solo is. I love the solo. Absolutely.
And Down the Line is great.
My favorite. What is the one he did here?
Rock House.
I love Rock House, but there's one. Oh, Sweet and Easy to Love You, and yeah. Devil Doll. I think
Devil Doll.
Because I think both of those songs allude to the Roy that we get fall in love
where
with.
We're going to go in like 60, 61, right?
Yeah, like, but meeting his son was really cool. It was like, that's another neat thing about this room is you never know who's gonna like come up here and come through.
Is he also a musician?
I don't know. Who did I meet? Was it Alex? I believe? I'm sure Alex plays. We didn't really get to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to bother him. I rarely ask people even for pictures when they come through because I don't want to
be tough. Yeah, that's a thing, right? You want
to try to save it for when I really like feel like I'd be dumb not to ask. Yep.
And I'm sure you get a lot of people that always want to come and see Sun Studios when they're in town touring.
Right.
Or, right.
Yeah.
Band members.
And I love that. It's cool to see people, just all the bands that come through. I don't know that we've ever had. I mean, you get your divas every now and then, I suppose, and it just like you do in every job. But for the most part, everybody that comes through is like the coolest.
Hey, I have a Marion Kiesker question. Was she always here for like the first?
Marion?
Yeah. When did she leave?
All right.
No, she did.
May I?
Yeah, go right
so
ahead.
So Marion was actually working at the radio station, WREC, down the street. Really cool thing about her is she was doing like broadcasts, like speaking parts, and the person who owned the station, Hoyt Wooten, liked her so much.
Sweet
that
name,
he,
bro.
Yeah, no, I know. Hoyt.
How you doing, Hoyt?
He asked Marion basically to take a salaried position with WREC. So she was getting paid salary, and she could still go work at all the other radio stations in town, but WREC had to have precedent, you know, that had to be the one that she worked at primarily. So then, as she's this hugely accomplished woman with like 8 million different jobs at this radio station and every radio station in town, a young, just out of college Sam Phillips starts working there. And so Marianne was kind of like his boss for a little while. He was broadcasting her Skyway Ballroom show that she hosted.
Skyway Ballroom show?
Yeah, it's on top
of
the
Peabody yet?
No.
Well, you can't get in this late, can you, Plez?
It's too late, yeah.
That's a shame. You could go tomorrow before Graceland.
See the ducks?
It's worth going on the roof. It's really cool.
I just climb up the fire escape.
We need more than 48 hours in Memphis.
Yes.
No wonder
sure.
You've been here
yes.
18 times, yeah. Lee.
I should move. I should have moved here 30 years ago.
That's why I've lived here for 30 years.
That's what he kept saying on
I'm
the
I'm
going to
move here and take
down.
Your job, Daniel.
Oh, shit. Never mind.
Yeah, actually, I do have a position opening up very soon.
Oh, no.
Assistant engineer, cush gig.
Well, I learned very fast. Like, I learned how to, you know, edit and produce a podcast and, you know, all my very lonesome. So, no, that's okay. The kids need me.
No, that's important.
I can't.
It's not the easiest thing to figure out on your own either. It's challenging. In its own ways. That's really cool.
Yeah.
How did you get interested in it? Like what led you to decide, you know what? I want to do a podcast and I also want to make sure that I know how to, you know, do all of the editing and, you know, producing of the podcast. Or the two of you. I mean, that's directed
mm-hmm.
to both of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of years ago, and I feel like even 2 years ago, I think podcasts weren't as popular. Right? Like,
yeah.
With every passing year now, they're getting more and more, and you get more and more messages from people being like, hey, you have a podcast. How do we do it as well? And I think what ended up happening was when I grew up in a small town in northern Ontario. So before all my friends started collecting vinyl again,
mm-hmm.
I started collecting vinyl, and I had a record player, and I was listening to Led Zeppelin and Steely Dan and a lot of dad rock, and I was really into that. And but I thought that that's all that there was.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there were bands my age still making music. So for me, it was very much something of the past, and I was really sad a lot of the time that I had missed out on something.
Yeah.
And I had missed out on Elvis, and I had missed out on the Beatles, and I just didn't have anything. So it made me really sad a lot. And then I went away for university, and it was a town that was about an hour and a half away from Toronto, so it wasn't quite in Toronto, and it was a small town, so I was too afraid to go to Toronto anyways. And I just happened to be in this really rich environment of, like, art and culture. And all of a sudden, I ran into a couple of girls who just, like, lit my world on fire. Like, they brought... It's like when Dorothy, like, left Kansas and went into...
Technicolor.
Technicolor. Yeah. That's exactly what happened to my life. And they started bringing me to shows. And I saw that there was still live music happening. And I remember going back to my family and going back to my brothers and being like, do you know that this is still happening in other parts of the country? That, like, there are bands our age that are still making music and it's not dead.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. So I started going to these shows. And I'm not a musician myself, and I never fashioned myself a musician. I never tried to be, but my friends and I, and more specifically my girlfriends and I, would go to the shows, and we would support, and we would bring the people out, and we would dance, and we would start the party. So a lot of the times when bands would tour from across Canada, and Canada's huge, right? We've got our West Coast, our East Coast, and it can take you, like, days and, you know, days and days and weeks to get from one end of the country to the other.
Right.
So when we get bands come into our part of the city, a lot of the times, even if they played to an empty room, and it was just us, they would come back again because of the hospitality, like we were saying earlier, that we offered to them and the friendships that we made. And then, you know, I'd go to Toronto and see shows.
If you're playing to people who are paying attention, that's, like, a big deal, too.
Exactly.
If you can tell that they give a shit,
a
damn about what you're doing.
You'd rather play to five people who give a damn than 500 people that aren't listening to you.
Yes.
So then I was questioning a lot, like, well, what's my role then? What am I doing here? Like, I'm not a musician, so I was really struggling with, like, my part in all of this until I discovered Pamela DeBar's book, I'm with the Band, Confessions of a Groupie.
Somebody has to document this stuff, too. It's important. And there's so, every day a band is born and dies before, an amazing band, before you ever get an opportunity to hear what they did.
Yeah.
And if there are not people that loved it, shouting from the mountaintop about, like, why, like, this mattered
Pay
to
attention.
Them.
Pay attention.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. like, then nobody's ever going to see what this person might have lived and breathed and died wanting and chasing. Mm-hmm. And that's an important, powerful thing, I think, that you, if it's worth it, you should be talking about it, you know?
Yeah, and once I realized that my role was important, and just being there and being a fan and supporting and being either a friend or a love, you know, or interest, or, you know, having relationships with people who would come in and out of my life actually was a thing that had been happening
right.
for decades, then I felt like I wasn't alone in that, and that I was actually playing a part in rock and roll history. And then there was a time where my dad got really ill, and so what I did to sort of cope was I opened up my laptop every day and I started writing down stories. And it was any stories from, like, any student that had made a profound effect on me to, but then it actually ended up that almost every second story was something about a band, something about a musician, a time that I went on tour, a time that, like, something crazy happened in a tour van. And so I realized, like, okay, so what am I going to do with this? Am I going to make a zine? Am I going to write a book? Am I going to self-publish? And then I had found out that there was a thing called a podcast. And I went, okay, this is it. This is where I'm going to share the stories, but not just mine. I'm going to share the stories of the women that have already talked about it from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and beyond. And then I met Lynx. And I always wanted a co-host, and she was the perfect one because – she, while I was kind of doing all of this stuff, she was sort of doing her own thing and living her own thing and on the tour buses of her own and living her, you know, her own life. And then we ended up coming together, realizing that we have this exact shared passion, and it's just been taking off since then.
Yeah, it's interesting because I sort of discovered, like, muses and groupies and things like that when I was, like, 12 or 13. just from loving like old bands like Rolling Stones and the Beatles, and every once in a while you'd see a picture of like this beautiful girl beside them, and I was like, who is this person?
Right.
And, like, how were they there and what were they doing? And
yeah,
so
they must be interesting enough to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Like, they were special, and just like these guys were special. And yeah, I was just wanted to know more and more about them. And so luckily that's sort of when the internet started to be a thing. And I would just research everything I could and collect photos and just try to seek out more information. But because the internet was so new as well, there wasn't that much information out there. So I actually, with a friend back in the LiveJournal days, we created a group, and we called it Vintage Groupies, and we posted like all the photos that we could find and all the information we could find about these women.
Marianne Faithfull, Anita Pallenberg.
Yeah. And people kept joining and adding more photos and adding more stories, and it sort of became a collection where I started to learn everything that I know now. And it was like a podcast, like the pre-podcast.
Right, that's like kind of the evolution of what
exactly.
the podcast
became. Yeah, exactly. So this is like the perfect evolution, like you
so
said.
So you both started like podcasting before being listeners of podcasting.
Well, right? I wasn't doing like the radio part. I was doing just online, like journaling.
Documenting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And cool. I can look back. I have this thing that never actually launched. It was like a rock and roll story time with Shanti. And I had gotten some of the like top, you know, Peterborough bands that I thought to like to come over to my house, and recorded something on like my Mac laptop. And I realized later the quality was shit, and I had no idea how to edit, and I was too young for that. And nothing ever happened with it. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I could kind of like give it another kick at the can again and do it a little bit later, like better later. But I already knew like the seeds had been planted early.
Right.
It's like everything that you do, right? And you can think about like your job here and your career and everything that led you here. There has been seeds that have been planted and things that have sprouted. Like,
this is the very first room I ever recorded in. I can't tell you that I never, after that happened, I didn't set foot in this place for another 14 years. Because I'd been here and I just like didn't come through again, and then to think that I would end up working here is like bizarre. And sorry, I gave tours all day, so my voice is cracking. But it's bizarre and wild, and it brings to me. It creates a certain specialness about this room and place that is totally just unique to me, and feels like it's just special. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like home in here. Because I remember it. I think I was talking with Mark Edgar Stewart, who's a great songwriter, who also happens to work here. And he was telling me about coming through here when he was like 15 and meeting Sam Phillips. And like, I was like, so how does that feel to you? Because that's how old I was when I first came through, to have like been here and be here now. He's like, well, it's incredible. It's like you never would have expected that, you know?
Yeah, to go back and tell like your childhood self, like this is going to be your trajectory. It's unimaginable.
I've said this before, like I think we've said this today, we've said this week as we're coming here, like we're so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
We're such fortunate people, and just to take the second to be like, holy shit.
Yeah. Everything's so positive, and this whole experience, sharing these stories.
So much fun rocking.
It's so much fun.
Actually,
just like it's just means so much to me, you know?
We get so much out of it. Every time we release an episode, it's like another accomplishment. And
we're almost on episode 100, and we still high five every time we record something.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Where did Plez go?
Plez, are you still back there?
I'm here.
Oh,
do
shit.
Do you want to tell us about Barbara?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I'll have to do that. Well, Plez, how much
Barbara
do you know?
Because
there's not any books I've really found on her.
Talking about Barbara Pippen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell some good stories while I go grab us all beers.
I don't
you need anything, Plez?
Yeah, I'll have a beer. That sounds great. Barbara Pittman was I think she was kind of like a Carl Perkins esque, from maybe even like Jackson, Tennessee, like that kind of. There was a dichotomy to the artist, which is that it's either East Tennessee, which means they came from like the hills, so they're like hillbilly, or there was the Mississippi, the cotton farm guys that came up. But Barbara was from East Tennessee. She really, really had a good relationship with Sam. So they spent a lot of time like working on her work, and she's, I think she's probably one of the most undercredited people whose stuff came out on the Sun label. Really, really breaking a lot of ground. Like, Sam was breaking a lot of ground in the early days mm-hmm. with the black artists. It was working okay. But he was also trying to push a female artist kind of thing. And, I mean, that's the radio station ends up being the thing. W-H-E-R. W-H-E-R.
W-H-E-R.
Sam created a radio station called W-H-E-R. It was the world's first all-woman radio station.
That's insane. That's so cool.
10,000 beautiful watts.
What year is that?
It's right around the Elvis times. So it's like 54, 55.
That's amazing.
Marion worked there. Sam's wife was Becky, was also in radio. So they all, he owned it, but the women ran it. And he always talked about at least having an idea before WDIA for an all black format radio station that he it's kind of beaten to the punch at, so I guess WHER was his way of coming back in late to the game and creating something that had never been done before. Hey!
Weird. Do you know how long that station was lasted?
WHER is still, I mean, technically, what's it called? The frequency is still another station now. 1530, I think.
Not all women
it was,
anymore.
No, no. And it was Sam's station probably for like 5 to 10 years. So it would have been done by the 70s.
That's amazing that in that time he thought cheers. To showcase female talent like
I know.
That.
I think that's so cool about it Sam. Is. He was
it,
like yeah.
It's something I think he deserves a certain amount of credit for, although it should be the base level for not, like everybody.
It's, but it's yeah. not just but it's not just that he did you know that he it's I shouldn't say empowered women. I don't think that that's the right thing, but Sam like believed in women's ability to run radio station enough to get one. But he also, I mean, in the earlier times with the blues artists, like, it was all stuff that nobody was doing in the world.
I think it was his biggest rule is just be different.
Yeah. So if I can say I'm the only person in the world doing this, then I'll do it. And I think that's Sam, like, he was totally into that. And Barbara Pittman's not the only.
Well, there's the Miller sisters. Yeah. And
but not only the artists that he recorded here, but he also, like, he helped female label owners all over the country, really, but especially throughout the South.
Do you remember any?
There's such thing as female label owners?
Yeah.
Wasn't Moon Records owned by a woman?
Moon was. Yeah. Trumpet.
Of course, Moon Records is
Moon Records
by a woman.
Was in Memphis, and it was, like, as an offshoot, not an offshoot of Sun, but, like, as an answer, right? Like, to Sun. It was, like, that's why they called it Moon.
Right.
And it was, what was the name of that woman? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Well, you've got the internet.
It's a full moon tonight.
Back
Trumpet. That was a lady in New Orleans.
It's a full moon tonight, really?
It's a sturgeon moon.
Oh, I really? Don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good night.
Yeah, it's a full moon, so if you guys have anything, any, like, you know, things that you need to release, then it's a good time to just, like,
just get them done.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just get that out of your system. Oof. You know, anything that's not serving you anymore, you just push that right out of your system, and then you cycle into your...
Can I burp?
Yeah, get it out
Dude,
of you.
Release
get
it.
It.
It's,
all right.
You get just it release
I've
it.
I've been burping into this microphone all night.
I have held a few back, but boy, I'm going to really give it to you next time, y'all.
Actually, I was talking with these two podcasters yesterday, and two girls from New York, and they're called Rock Candy, and they're saying that they have to edit constantly their podcast because they're always saying and they're always burping into the microphone.
That's awesome.
And I
Keeping
told them
the burps, that's what I do.
Fart mic.
Well, I told them that Lynx and I very rarely edit our podcast.
It tends to just flow naturally.
Yeah. Only if it's a super long pause
or,
really
we've had
obvious
some like
stutter.
Knocks on the door or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, it's pretty straight through.
Yeah. My dad used to keep a microphone set up hooked up to a tape machine and he recorded his farts.
We heard you have a pretty awesome dad.
Sounds like Frank Zappa would do.
So yeah, do you Do you want to tell them about your dad, or do you want me to?
My paw.
Your paw.
Yeah, tell us about your paw.
Yeah, my dad. My dad moved to Memphis in the kind of in the mid to late 70s. He moved here to get, you know, in the music, and which is really funny because I think like most of the time people from Memphis are just from Memphis. They just stay from Memphis, and it's just like that forever. But my dad moved here from Houston to get himself wrapped up in the Memphis music scene, having heard Led Zeppelin 3, which was recorded or mixed and mastered at a studio called Ardent. Also, Big Star was a band that he worked with. And he moved here, and he ended up, it was like, fuck, it was crazy. One day in 78, the engineer didn't show up. Daniel, do you have your headphones on? I think Daniel might
He's
like to
hear this.
He's
about to put his headphones
on. So one day...
Daniel, put your headphones on.
You need to hear this.
Daniel.
Yes?
Put your headphones
on. So one day...
I wasn't doing anything
John,
illegal.
John Hampton was sitting, answering the phone and answering the door at Arden. And the engineer on a session did not show up. And so John Hampton ended up saying, I can maybe do this. And he went and he recorded a record that day. And then over the next 40 years, he, I want to say, I think it's like 40 or 50 gold and platinum records and six total Grammys and a bunch of other like.
Well, the Jim Blossom.
Massive.
The White Stripes. Like what?
Right, yeah. So with the ZZ Top, George Thorogood, Steve Earle, Cat Power.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he did Cat Power. Dude, yeah. Steve Earle.
Wild Cat shit. Power. It's nuts. John Hampton was their, he was their top engineer at Arden, which is like the Abbey Road of Memphis, kind of. And he was there in that position for a really long time. So my dad was badass. Cool. And I never, ever recorded a thing until I started doing it here.
That's so cool. Oh, can we give a shout out to Badass Dad?
Yeah.
Lynx's dad and my dad are our biggest fans. They listen every single week. We did an episode on this woman named Allison Rouse, who actually in her, the title of her book is like Allison Rouse, We've Got Tonight, like
the notorious
groupie. And I accidentally said that Cheap Trick was... and Foreigner were Canadian, because I just really went through her book really quickly.
Yeah, that's
yeah I know. Suck the wind between your teeth. And my dad was the first one to message me and be like, they no. are not Canadian.
Oh, if it makes you feel any better, I couldn't tell you where either of them were from.
Really? Come on. Cheap Trick?
Aren't
yeah.
they like
Cheap
Yeah.
Like I listened to both.
Illinois, but... Cheap Trick. And Foreigner is like Mick Jones is... is British.
I thought that Graham, when you said it, but you were pretty like, you know, forward with
it. Those crickets.
I didn't want to doubt you on that.
Yeah, I know. And then actually I guess somebody had sent her the link of the podcast that we had done on her, and she messaged us the next day and was like, thank you so much for that great review on my book. You got a couple of facts wrong, but I loved it. And I would love to come on your podcast for an interview. And so we're like, okay. I was like, I'm so sorry. We've been
the
so busy.
The facts are unimportant.
Right,
we're
going to
interview her.
As long as you're talking about
make
somebody.
Up for that little, you know, error. It's a small error.
Yeah, she was, okay, do you know John Entwistle?
Yeah.
You know how there was signed, like there was the paper like John Entwistle dies in a hotel room with a
stripper
prostitute overdose.
Yeah, cocaine, hookers.
No, I do not know
cocaine,
about that.
Cocaine and hookers?
Well, it was
that's
cocaine,
how it
hooker,
was
in his
put out
hotel
there.
That
Vegas.
Was her. Yeah, that
was the story that yeah. was put out.
But she wasn't a sex worker, and she wasn't doing any drugs, but that's how they, like, portrayed her.
And even if
her.
She was, like, that doesn't
exactly.
disqualify her
thank
from
and
her
Daniel.
Humanity.
Wasn't he doing
yeah,
exactly
Daniel,
thing.
Thank
oh my
you
God.
For that.
I mean, it doesn't.
But nobody's saying that she killed him, though, with that.
They were,
they
though.
Were, though.
They were,
though. They were.
Yep.
It's his choice.
Actually, Plez, do you ever give tours here?
I do.
All the time.
Best
do you
tours.
You sing and, like...
Nope.
Dance and stuff,
nope.
or you keep it pretty?
No, I'm a total fucking
smartass. I really enjoyed
smart
you singing in the tour, Daniel, that, actually.
Oh,
it
really?
Showed your passion for it.
I worry it's too loud.
No, it's great.
I just try to do it. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I just try to be myself in every interaction with people. And I'm sure I don't always accomplish that, but
You must have different groups come in, like some that are sort of quiet, some that are more boisterous.
Y'all were a really good group. Enjoyed giving the tour to everybody in that group. The 5:30 today that you gave me. Plez actually almost gave you the tour.
Oh, y'all almost got the best tour in the house.
I mean, actually, you didn't hear his Marion story. It tops mine, undoubtedly.
I did give you probably the best part. So Daniel, actually, funny enough, is of a newer kind of class of tour guides here, and he plays music on his tour. Mm-hmm. Not just plays music, we play the songs, but Daniel actually performs during a piece of his tour, and I think it's really,
I didn't do that really,
really
for y'all. I usually play the upright bass on this old Conway Twitty song when he was still performing under the name Harold Jenkins. I didn't play that one when y'all were walking down today.
No, we got the guitar with the dollar bill.
Yeah. Everybody does that.
So, okay, let me just say that sometimes Daniel plays a little bit when he knows he has time as people are coming downstairs. And it's
are we really going to do this?
I think it's really neat, man. Yeah, because as I started working here, the tours were always recitation. That's an oral storytelling. Like, it's a very specifically sometimes – maybe like stand-up routines are a way to think of it, but Daniel and a few other people, Tiffany Graham
plays.
As well.
We have some great, like some of the women who give tours
they
here.
They change the tours. I never thought I would ever see it, and I've seen it, and I'm so happy.
It's cool. It is really cool. We're kind of given the freedom to, as long as
we give a shit,
we have the freedom to kind of tell the story the way we see it. And I think the interpretation of what you come away from with the story of what happened in this room, I think that's cool that it's not like, here's the script, learn the script.
Well, and the tour is... Sorry.
You know, it's okay.
But
we know you have a lot to say.
The tour is like the coolest thing in the city. The tour of Sun is, I mean, I think it's probably better than... even Graceland. It's coolest thing.
We'll Michael Jackson
different,
that
but
out.
It's cool. The coolest Beep. Thing. I love the Sun Beow. The Sun Tour, and I've been here like 15, 16 times.
Yeah.
And I love
you
it
know
every
what's
time.
Up, man.
Because every time I get a different tour guide.
Have you had Lana's tour? If you've been coming here that many times, Lana.
Last year,
probably,
I was here last summer. And
do you remember
it,
who gave the tour to
it was
you?
It's a woman.
You don't remember? I guess you can get a name. It's too bad you guys aren't going to be in town for longer because you could totally. I would love to know if you'd seen anybody else's tour just so I can find out if mine is better.
I've seen so many. And the reason I love it, though, is because.
Yours was my favorite.
Well, you don't know that yet. Have you seen anybody else's?
No.
There you go, then. You can't trust that.
But, there's not much to the building. Like, you go to Graceland, there's lots of rooms you can go through and you can walk and you go over and see this and you go see this and you go see that. But this is basically, it's one and a half rooms, basically, that you want to check out. And it's like an audio tour. So you come in here and you just take in the vibe and you play some select cuts that were recorded here. And as they're being played, you can envision, like, wow, this music was
great. The addition
right
of the music is amazing. You definitely get the vibe.
I liked how you were like, for the love of God, well, maybe you didn't say it in those words, but you're just like, don't touch any of the instruments because we had an issue where somebody came and played the upright bass.
Well, strangely enough, no one had touched it. Like, when it fell over.
Can you go into detail on that?
I'll tell that story.
You mentioned that someone, like, knocked over.
I was so curious. I was like, who was that asshole that came in, went behind that stand-up bass, and started going.
I finished a tour with a really good group of, like, people who. Because I don't know if I. It's important you're engaged with what the person telling you something about is. It's important you're engaged if you go to what is essentially a show and that you're not just like over there bored. And sometimes that does happen. You'll get groups where you're like, oh, you guys are stuck with me for 40 minutes and you're ready to go to Beale Street. But so I'd just given a great tour to like a great group of people. I walk out. I open the door for everyone to exit. I can't even get back down the stairs into Marion's office before someone's like, hey, there was a really loud bang in the studio, which is never what you want to hear.
No.
And they're like, I'm not sure what it was. And I was like, and I bet, you know what? I bet that's who did it because they were like, probably like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So I didn't even like, I was like, okay, cool, thanks. I walk in and there's a crowd of people around the upright that is just like I could have chalked it out on the floor. Oh. So anyways,
did you see that?
What?
That amp just knocked as you said that.
Really?
Yeah. It's like a ghost, one of the ghosts of some
I mean,
studios.
Sometimes you see
the
things
amp is
up here.
Pissed that someone.
Yeah, like, well, that's where the bass used to sit. The one that fell was this one right here.
The ghost of Bill Black.
Yeah.
Just resonated through that amp on the story.
So the bass falls. I come in, the bridge, it was that bass right there, 1940s K. That Plez could tell you a really cool story about that bass. But the bridge had snapped in, and that was all the damage that I could see. And I was like, this is going to have to be repaired. So I call Amro Music here in Memphis because they do like basically all our tuning and that kind of work on these types of instruments, and explain the problem. And it's like a $300 fix, which is we can take care of it. It's not a big deal, and no one owned up to, like someone totally went over there, tried to pluck a string, and didn't realize, and it fell.
Yeah.
So I find out during the course of the conversation that I can fix it myself, and so I put the bridge back on. And I thought it was, like, adhered to the body, when really it's held by the tension of the strings and
yeah,
not...
It's just sitting there.
Yeah.
The strings hold it
they too. Said as long as the dowel rod inside of it, which I also did not know upright basses had that... as long as that is still connected and attached and not falling down into it, you should be okay to fix it yourself. So I did, and I was so relieved because that bass, I've never felt so – I don't play bass. Like I know one song on that and two songs, and it's like I feel so much affection for that instrument. I love it so much. It's beautiful.
It's the best, eh?
You can see its history.
Yes. Okay, so Plez, now tell the story about the upright K. Because I feel like that bass also – I mean,
this bass is a 1941 bass?
Do you know the exact – I know it's a 40s K. I don't know.
Plez.
He's smoking.
He's smoking.
Oh, he knows.
Okay, so when he gets back,
yes.
He can
we'll talk
tell
about
that story.
Bass.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you were able to fix it.
I was shocked that I could. That was the first and only time I hope I ever have to do that.
Yeah.
It broke my heart because I was so worried it was going to be done. Now, tell me this. Did I tell your group that it had broken and was done, or did I like imply that we fixed it?
You just said that it was...
a disaster or horrendous.
Like, don't touch because we had an accident.
Well, that's so much more effective. To remind people, hey, you could be the one to really fuck this up for all of us.
Don't, you just throw down.
Don't
then
add,
to be
like we
please.
Fixed it, but like no, yeah, I definitely was.
But how many
sure
of these instruments are actually vintage
didn't touch
guitars?
Anything?
Well, a lot of them are vintage. The only ones that the so we don't really know if that's a 40s K and if it has been in Memphis the entire time since it's around. It could have been in this room at some point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can't tell you it was.
Think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Now, there's a silver tone guitar over there that we got from Carl Perkins' family.
Yeah.
And I asked somebody who was playing with Carl near the end of Carl's life if he'd ever seen it before to just see if I could confirm.
Verify it.
Yeah. And he said, yeah, I remember seeing one that looked like this when we were at his home studio. And so I feel like I can say for sure that that one is at least from somebody here. That's Marty Stewart's guitar. That's a 1930s Gretsch, which I also love that guitar. I don't remember if I picked that up and played it on your tour or not.
It was just the dollar bill that you picked up.
Sometimes I'll pick them up. Sometimes I feel like with the room, if you're like, hey, don't touch this, and then I'm like, like it just looks really rude.
Like, well,
yeah, exactly. And I'm not trying to give off that kind of...
But the thing you didn't mention on your tour, though, which is a kind of cool fact, though, is when... Sun closed down there in the early 60s and Sam moved to the other location. This was empty for a while. And at one point, it became like a swimmer shop.
So, scuba shop. There's nowhere to scuba dive that I know of except
in
like
Memphis?
Maybe
in
a
Memphis.
Pool.
Know, right?
Like, you can't really scuba dive the Mississippi. You'd never be seen again.
I'm guessing
you know?
They weren't in business for that long.
That's the very first thing that occupied the space after Sam left.
Yeah.
Now,
the tiles,
the floor tiles are original. I'll show you guys something
right.
that no one else that's listening will get to see. Ooh. So this will be special. But I can show you how I can actually prove that the tiles on the floor are real. The tiles on the wall and the ceiling, it gets a little dicier because it's from about. I don't even know. Let me keep some mystery. What they did, I don't know which ones. There are definitely some over the years that have had to be replaced.
Right.
I will not put a number on how many that is because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they put a paneling up for these other businesses and a drop ceiling in. So the ceiling is probably the most original aspect beyond the floor. The lighting fixtures are all original. I cannot tell you the nerves you feel when you're taking the lamp off to change a bulb. Yeah, it's just like, ooh, I just don't want to drop the glass. But the floor, the owner takes so much pride and care in keeping this floor original that, I mean, the tiles, like, you can see there's places where they have broken. I mean, they've been around 70 years now almost or more. But he takes so much pride in keeping this place as true to its structural foundation as possible that when tiles break, he will come in here with a blowtorch to get them heat to where you can loosen them, and they just kind of like peel up because it's laminate, then re-adhere them and blowtorch them again to seal so that the floor stays original. I love that. That is special. I mean, like, I don't think that it's still the same place, but it's kind of like the ship of, is it Theseus? The argument of, like, is it original if it's all been shifted and changed over the years, you know?
It's nice, the attention of detail that he puts into this.
I love that.
Who owns Sun?
John Shore is the owner's name. He's a really cool guy. The Shores have managed the place since, like, the 90s, as I understand it. And it's cool because they keep the, like, charm alive in this room for the people they hire to work here, for the environment that is created with... We've got a great staff, you know, that is really fun to work with, and it's just so hard to have a bad day up here. I think I would probably take this whole story out, like, to be honest.
This is beautiful, man.
But I love being in here.
Are you a fan of the music?
Oh, absolutely.
Before you got this job?
Yeah, I was. So my dad was a huge Elvis fan.
Yeah.
He also was is a extremely conservative Church of Christ preacher. So I left the day I turned 18 with nothing but the Chick-fil-A uniform I had on my back. So it was just like, and we like, we don't speak, you know. But he was a huge Elvis fan. So I grew up listening to everything he could get his hands on with Elvis. And Elvis is undeniable, in my opinion. But I do think growing up here and seeing how much his impact has had on the world and knowing all of the things that are happening now in Memphis that have happened in the last couple of decades and post, like, 50s era, Stax, High Records, 3-6 Mafia, Unapologetic is, like, this awesome hip-hop and R&B thing happening right now that I feel like someday people are going to be coming from all over the world to be, like, asking questions about these people. And I wish we could find that same level of enthusiasm for even the stuff that, like, Big Star. You know, I mean, that's like something that is, they literally altered the course of where pop music went, and so many people don't even know.
They were the first power pop band, pretty much.
Yeah. And that's like, if you're not in a band and you know about Big Star, that's not unlikely. You know, there's so many people who don't, and there's so, Memphis is full of stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
Clay Otis is this guy who just passed away a year or two ago, who put out one of the best records I've ever heard. Jonna Meisner is this incredible songwriter and cello player that lives here. So much talent in her harmonies, her vocals. Marcella, who sings in a band, Marcella and her lovers. Kelly Anderson is this woman who writes and is the best solos, best guitar solos. Dude, you would literally...
She's a local
everybody,
artist?
Yes. Yeah. Everybody, when Kelly Anderson and these people I've mentioned play, like, it's one of those things where you might be over there texting or talking and then suddenly you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on stage?
Because they get
your attention.
This is
different. This is good.
Have you gotten to record with them here yet?
Not with Kelly yet. With Marcella and Jonna, yes. We had a really cool night in here cutting a song of mine that's going to come out sometime soon in this room with Pro, who's a hip-hop writer around here in Memphis, on Unapologetic, the label I mentioned. He was here that night. I just can't say enough good things about what's happening now. And the level of talent Memphis still has.
Yeah.
What type of music is it? Like,
so Marcella moved here from New Orleans, I believe after Katrina, and she has what is called like a swamp soul sound. And I think
swamp
that's the
soul.
Best description of it, too. Yeah. She plays with this incredible guitar player, David Kowser. She's got Roy Mills Sullivan on drums, Art Edmiston on sax. He plays with REO Speedwagon a lot, and... God, I hope I got that right. If not,
my dad
and so
will.
Or maybe it was the Allman Brothers, actually, or both. I mean, Art is an incredible saxophone player. You've got Alicia. She does Alicia Pop. She played with Jay Retard. She's also in a band. Oh, what was their name? The River City Tan Lines, which is a great band name.
Mm-hmm. It is. Link's got some big.
I got
Memphis.
More than a tan today.
Memphis Tan Lines.
Tan Lines today.
Right, yeah.
Yep. It was worth it, though.
Sunburnt,
got to be by the pool.
Pool.
It's so, yeah. I'm not the kind of, you know, as soon as it turns warm and I find people like, oh, it's too hot, and then it's winter, and they're like, oh, I'm freezing. But as soon as it gets hot, I love this weather. So I never complain about how hot it is, but I was sitting outside today by the pool, and I was like, I don't remember when I've been sitting somewhere and it's been this hot before, but I loved it. I really liked it.
Today was so bad. We had a breath of fresh air for a couple weeks where it was tolerable, and then, I mean, we'll get to October sometimes even early November, and it's still like, oh, man.
That sounds like heaven to me, though. Well, We get sometimes like the same temperatures that you guys get, and the humidity in Toronto is pretty bad too. But just the feeling of the sun on your skin is completely different. Like, you feel it within like a minute. I can feel my skin being like, oh my God, what is this on me right now? You know?
Everything feels really amazing since we've been here.
Memphis is intense.
I think Memphis is probably one of my favorite places in the whole world now.
Because it really is. I mean, it's an incredible place.
Yeah, you have, and you guys have. So thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and thank you for coming in.
I'm very tempted to move here. And if you guys ever come up to Toronto, for the love of God, please call us.
Well, we've been talking about taking some trips, and I think we're about to have do you. That.
Me and Daniel were just talking about taking a trip to
Toronto.
Were
we really? I remember.
Lily, close enough.
It means hanging out with y'all. This has been
We'd love to give. We'd love to, and that's the whole thing about reciprocate with the with what I loved.
And
from
we can bring you into our studio.
Yeah, Lynx can hook us up. We'll give you a Massey Hall backstage.
I work at a couple music venues, like Massey Hall's our most famous special venue.
Oh, man, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
I love, I'm such a nerd for this stuff. Like microphone placement, studios, and like venues, bands. I will sit through anything and go anywhere if there's the possibility that something really fucking cool is happening in that space. And you don't know till you've gone and checked it out, you know?
Yeah, you can feel the magic. Like, you feel it here. Yeah. This is...
That's probably also the tiny bombs.
This night is brought to you by our unofficial sponsor of tiny bombs.
You know, if you give them a shout out, I could probably like get them to be like,
it's actually delicious.
It really is really good.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.